Bucky's Basement.
Welcome to this week's episode of Bucky's Basement. I'm Bucky, and as always, in the basement with me today, I have old boy.
Forever and ever.
And Juicebox.
Most of the time.
And we are back with another episode of Casting Cage. You guys have followed along. Hopefully, you're following along in chronological order because we are reviewing Nick Cage movies straight out of the 80s into the 90s. I think we're up to, what, it's 92 today?
92. It's 1992, y'all.
I was 10 years old.
I was too.
And my parents probably didn't let me see the movie we're about to cover.
I definitely saw this movie with my parents. it's a family favorite.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That is surprising.
I distinctly remember loving this movie. Pizza Hut gave a DVD away of this movie. I remember watching it.
What?
Have you read so many books or what?
It was like if you bought a large with maybe, I don't know,
you got some wings, pizza.
Got a free DVD.
So
that's a big deal.
This movie was rated what, PG-13?
I guess.
If they're giving it away, they're not giving away an R-rated movie, right?
Definitely not. I wouldn't even think PG-13. I don't remember after watching it any cuss words, but to bring up the point that old boy makes with Pizza Hut getting involved and giving this DVD away, we are finally, if you've been following along with this the past few Casting Cage episodes, seemingly out of Nick Cage purgatory, because we finally have something blockbusterish or mainstreamish, or you know, something that probably was on TV commercials. You know, they showed the trailer on like regular TV, especially if Pizza Hut's getting involved in giving this movie away.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely remember this movie from seeing it as a kid. Like, yeah. It was in the zeitgeist enough for young me to know about it.
And if you haven't been following along, we're talking about movies that you've probably never heard of, like Firebirds and Zandali, and you've probably heard of Wild at Heart. We've been in Nick Cage hell for a long time doing this. And I thought, because Juicebox said at least the next one, like we're, you know, it's going to be good. And
yeah,
I don't know.
Famous last words.
Right? Yeah, let's go ahead and dive into this week's episode of Casting Cage. We are reviewing the movie Honeymoon in Vegas, which is currently at a 64% on Rotten Tomato. We're going to get into the cast here in a second. I do want to touch on it really quick before we do plot by Juicebox that I kind of want to jump into the director, because this is the first thing I looked up, and it's beginning to be the first thing I look up, and what else they direct, what else they write.
Yeah,
right?
Same.
So this is Andrew Bergman. He did get two Golden Globe nominations for, or they got two Golden Globe nominations for this movie, Best Picture and Best Actor in a Comedy or Musical. But this guy, Andrew Bergman, he didn't do very much, right? He's a writer. He wrote a lot of cool stuff, dating back to Blazing Saddles. He wrote Blazing Saddles. And I was like, holy shit. Yeah. Like, you know, he wrote a couple of other things, but he also wrote and directed The Freshman, which is a pretty decent film. It Could Happen to You, which is another Nick Cage film that we're going to have to review here in about 3 years.
Oh, is that Bridget Fonda?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that.
No.
Not 3 years our time, but 3 years chronological time for Nick Cage. So we're entering the kind of quirky Nick Cage like era. We've come out of purgatory and now we're getting into like that.
We've
talked about this before. Amos and Andrew, It Could Happen to You, That's a Family Man, or something like that.
He definitely feels dialed back in this movie. He has his own Nick Cage moments, but he's not like going on. He's not the Nick Cage that we've seen in the past movies.
Yeah. True.
This is like the tamest Nick Cage.
Well, I want to talk about that, but before we move on, Andrew Bergman, the director of this movie, also wrote and directed Striptease, which is probably his claim to fame. I think he has 7 credits on directing total.
Yeah.
And he thought up and directed Striptease.
Okay.
He also wrote, thought up, and directed Honeymoon in Vegas, which we're reviewing today.
See, I would say this would be his claim to fame, because I feel like this is probably a more successful movie, or am I wrong about that?
I don't know.
And striptease?
I used to work in this hotel, and I wore a penguin outfit for a while. I was a banquet waiter, and I wore a tuxedo. There,
you don't have to tell me.
No, it wasn't that one. It was the next one. Right?
Oh, yeah. Then I was there, too. I lived behind the place.
You did. But one time, I was in an elevator, and somebody said, hey, can you take this plate up to this room? And I opened this elevator and stepped in, and it's
Andrew drunk. Bergman. No,
it's drunk Gina Gershon and and Chris Robinson from the Black Crowes. And they had just been on some kind of like date or bender or something. And they step inside this elevator and have to ride like seven floors with them making out right next to me, holding this hot plate of food that I'm taking to a room. Striptease had just come out. So my wandering eyes are just like going as hard to the side as possible.
I think you're misremembering movies.
Yeah, dude.
Striptease is a movie with Demi Moore in
it. Oh, shit. You're right. What am I thinking of? Showgirls. Okay.
Yeah, I was like, dude, that movie's... Yeah, okay.
All right. We could probably cut all this out.
Gina Gershon. I was like, what does this have to do with anything?
Yeah, man. It's all right.
Striptease is where I fell in love with Demi Moore.
Which is... All right. Yeah. And it's a comedy, so okay.
Burt Reynolds fits in that.
Kind of fits the mold of his movies.
I guess comedies, so. Okay. Now it makes a lot more sense because I'm thinking Showgirls, and that's a very dramatic movie. All right, before we get into reviewing Honeymoon in Vegas and going through the cast and everything, we like to do this segment on Bucky's Basement, especially during Cast and Cage episodes, where we have a segment called
Plot by Juice Box.
Commitment phobe Jack loses a big fortune in Vegas to a professional gambler who borrows Jack's fiancée Betsy for a getaway as collateral. But when Betsy starts falling in love with her captor, Jack must summon his courage to win her back. I don't know if that was the official plot.
I mean, kind of, right? There's a lot more that happens than that. But
yeah, that was on IMDb, so who knows? Some person from Amazon could have written
that. That's right. Jeff Bezos probably wrote that.
Now we like to kick it back to Juicebox for his take on what he thinks the plot is of this movie.
A dirty old perv rigs a poker game to hook up with a 20-something-year-old.
Fair enough.
I mean, there's not very much depth to this movie, and we're about to get into it. Before we do that, let's go ahead and jump into the cast. Obviously, you know who we are covering during this entire series.
The dirty old perv, Jimmy Kahn.
Not the dirty old perv. We're talking about the one and only Nick Cage as Jack in Honeymoon in Vegas.
Jack, yeah.
And then we have Sarah Jessica Parker making a very early role in her film career. As Betsy then / Donna.
Yeah, I guess she plays Donna too, right?
Like three short little scenes.
She does. Then we have the
dirty old perv, Jimmy.
Dirty Kahn. Old perv / professional gambler named Tommy, who is played by James Caan.
James Caan.
Before we get into the rest of the cast, we've discussed this a little bit, but I want to kind of dive into it. I'm a James Caan fan.
We know you are.
Like, I think, you know, Sonny Corleone grows up and is still the fucking boss. Like, and the way he carries himself.
No, he was
everything.
No, fuck Sonny Corleone. He abused his wife. He was a piece of shit in that movie. He deserved to die. He deserves to die in every movie he's in. He plays a piece of shit in every movie he's in. Even in Misery, when he is like, you're supposed to feel bad for him, he's kind of a piece of shit in that movie. Like, man. Every movie he's a piece of shit. And for me, this movie especially, I was cringing like every scene that he was in. If like every scene that he was hitting on Sarah Jessica Parker was just like a fucking grandpa just like slobbering over.
I got you.
It was gross.
How old was he supposed to be in this movie? They never said.
So they never said. I was trying to figure that out, but he was like at least mid-50s.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess he had like grown kids.
He had grown kids, and his wife had been dead for like 10 years or something like that, and I think she said...
Was 38 when she died. It did say that in the movie. Okay, I was trying to figure it out.
So maybe he was like 40-ish, late 40s, early 50s or something.
Jimmy Kahn he's a bad character in this, but he's clearly got some hang-ups on his dead wife, and he's like, he has to have some woman that looks just like her. So, but every character has some weird hang-ups in this movie.
That's true, but let's talk about like the reason that Juicebox hates James Kahn so much is because he's a good actor.
I guess so. But
meant
he plays
to be hated
this,
in every movie. That's what he's cast. Like he's typecast.
He's cast to play the same character in every movie, just like an asshole.
Yeah, but he plays the perfect. What do you call that?
Gangster or hothead?
The opposition man? To the good person, the antagonist. Yes.
Okay. Here's the thing, man. If he was a great actor, he'd be in a lot more movies.
He's
name
in
five.
A ton of shit.
Name five.
I'm going to go Honeymoon in Vegas.
I can start with the one we just watched. All right.
I'm going to go Godfather.
Yeah.
I'm going to say James Caan. The show Las Vegas.
That's a fucking show, my man. Name five movies.
That's the show Las Vegas.
Come on, man. There's a football movie everybody knows.
Juicebox mentioned one.
Misery.
Misery. There's a football movie everybody knows. I don't think that's James Caan.
It is.
It's all the right moves.
I feel like his other big movie is Elf, right?
Elf.
Yeah. Elf. It's Brian Song, something like that.
Oh, yeah. He is in Brian Song.
Named five.
It's so many more, though.
Dude, if you look at his list, it's a lot.
It's a lot of bad movies.
Self-proclaimed huge fan over here.
Okay, let me rephrase. I enjoy it every time he pops up on the screen.
Was he the bag man in Way of the Gun?
I like that movie. You're right.
But anyway, he'd star in more movies.
He does
right?
play a lot of the same roles. All right, so let's move on. Mr. Miyagi's in this movie. Plays the cab driver. Love him.
He's like the third billed person or something in the credits, and it's like he's in the movie for such a small amount of time.
Because he just came off that Karate Kid fame. I mean, they're riding like the
I guess
big
Karate
names.
Kid Part 2. He had just come out of Karate Kid Part 2, right? And he plays up against some other Nick Cage movie that we reviewed, wasn't it?
He plays more of a laid-back comedic character in this, not so authentic, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a bit role.
Yeah.
His name's Mahi Mahi in this movie.
Yeah, no, I had no complaints. I was just surprised that he was the third billed person.
Yeah.
So I've got Nick Cage, James Caan, Sarah Jessica Parker. For this podcast, we'll refer to her as SJP. We've got Mr. Miyagi, and then I put every other late 80s, early 90s movie character you would expect to be in the background.
You're right. Ben Stein. Yeah.
This is one of Ben Stein's first roles, though, I think.
Is it?
Really?
I feel like it says in the credits, it said either introducing or featuring. It was something that was like, I don't think it was featuring.
The main Elvis from the Flying Elvises.
Yeah,
in this
it would have had to been. Oh. Ferris Bueller would have already had been out
yep.
before. Yeah. Wait a minute. That guy's famous?
The main Elvis of the Flying Elvises in Honeymoon in Vegas.
Name him.
I had his name last night. I didn't write it down, but he's been in a couple of things. Like starting in the 50s.
Okay.
And he was a big comedic role. I thought he was in one of the National Lampoon's Vacations for some reason.
Okay.
Like Vegas Vacation or something. But he's been in something that you've heard of.
His name is Burton Gilliam.
Burton
Gilliam.
Yeah, sure. Now, Bruno Mars is in this movie.
He is. And
it's pretty cool.
We should talk about that as we get to that scene, because I want to talk about that scene. But it blows me away. So like, that's what, 4-year-old Bruno Mars?
Killing it. Yep.
God, yeah, something 4 or 5, something like that.
So did we establish what's happening in this movie?
We haven't done it because I want to get into we're moving along, right? Cast, we've done the director. I want to talk about two things. One, the opening scene of this movie.
The cartoon?
Not the cartoon, but let's get into that for real.
With his mom?
The opening scene with his mom. The first thing you see is inside of a hospital, and the words come up on the screen, 1987 in a New York hospital, like we don't have eyes. And that's what the first thing, like I was like, this is a red flag. Like I can obviously tell this is a hospital. Yeah. You didn't have to put that on
the
screen.
Yeah,
they could have just said 2 years ago or however many years ago it was supposed to be.
Exactly. And I put, why couldn't we see that? But let's talk about the opening scene, because you see Nick Cage walk into a hospital room.
Right.
His mom's on her deathbed. And what a weird fucking thing for a mother to say to her son right before she's about to die.
Yeah.
Like, don't get married ever. Nobody can love you like I do. That's like Psycho shit. Like, literally the movie Psycho.
That's Anne Bancroft, by the way. But yeah, it's a mind fuck. It's like, who does that?
Yeah. And then she just dies right there with her eyes open, like staring at him.
Yeah. He's kind of like, Mom, that's kind of unreasonable. And she's like, strokes out. And then now he's haunted by it.
It's like if you ever saw like an improv class and they're like, hey, I need you to die real quick. And that just looks like somebody faking a death.
Yeah.
It was so not natural.
Yeah.
But then we go right from that to the opening credits. No, hold on. The opening credits, which that got
is the cartoon
way under my skin. It's the cartoon.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about this. This was a fucking thing in between. I'm going to say 1989 and 1994. Can you guys think of any other movie that opens like this with the opening credit scene?
With cartoons.
With cartoons telling a little story about what's about to happen in the movie.
God, I feel like there's one on the tip of my tongue, but is it not like a vacation movie, right?
Christmas Vacation.
Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, that's one of them.
Okay.
The one that stuck into my head that when I was watching this, I was like, they just fucking ripped off Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is the almost exact same opening. It tells the story of the movie in a cartoonish form. And I was like, where have I seen this before? And then I kept thinking about it. I was like, is that Honey, I Shrunk the Kids? And I had to look it up. So I YouTubed it. And it's for sure. 100%.
Okay. All right, cool. All right.
Like, it's like everybody was ripping everybody off. And this little cartoon opening credit scene was the hot thing back then.
Yeah.
All these movies came out around the same time and did the same thing.
Three of them.
Yeah. But let's talk about what's happening in this movie.
Right. So we fast forward to 7 years later. Nick Cage is in a relationship with, what's her name? SJ?
SJP, Sarah Jessica Parker. It's Betsy in the movie.
I'm not ever get that right. Betsy.
Which is just like the wrong name for that chick in this movie, right? Like, Betsy is just like, it's a fine name, but it just doesn't fit this character for some reason.
Right.
The crazy thing about Betsy is before we even meet her in this movie, we find out that Nick Cage is a private investigator.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
It's the greatest fucking thing in the world. It's like, he's a PI, and his very first case that we see him on the screen is catching a man's wife that is cheating with Mike Tyson.
Right. It's so weird.
It's such a weird, like, ongoing joke throughout the movie, too. They call back to it. Like,
and it's like this roughneck guy who obviously works construction. He shows the pictures of his wife who's not attractive. And
she's just eating a bag of Doritos.
It's like,
right.
Like, Buzz, your girlfriend. Whoop. I mean, it looked the same fucking thing. But I made a thought right when I saw that. I said, I would find this ridiculous, but I know I'm watching a Nick Cage movie. So it's not. Like, it just makes sense, or it just adds to the excitement or entertainment that I'm going through when I'm watching these movies.
It is funny.
So that's the first thing we see. And then we meet SJP, Sarah Jessica Parker.
It's gonna take a while.
I know. And we learn that she's, what, the shy teacher?
She's a shy teacher.
We go through a mini montage of, like, them walking down the street or her at his poker game, like, entertaining all the guys. Like, basically, he's got the perfect girl. She's young, she's hot, she's, you know, loyal, she's...
Yeah, she's just cool, right?
She's got wavy hair.
Right, very 90s.
SJP.
Sure.
I admittedly have to say, and I'm going to say on this podcast, that I have never, ever had a thing for SJP.
Me neither.
Like, through Sex and the City and all this stuff, I just was not into her. Wasn't into her acting.
Did you watch all those?
Wasn't into... No, but I
watched every episode trying to get into her, but I just couldn't do it.
I had a girlfriend at the time who watched the show, or, you know, people that I knew watched the show.
Right.
It was a popular show. But movies that she was in, everything else, terrible.
Dude, five movies she's in. I couldn't do it.
I don't know. I'm sure.
Sure.
13 going on 30 or something like that.
Okay.
Anyway, so I think in this movie, I'm blown away.
She's attractive.
I think she's attractive. I think she's good at acting in this movie.
Nailed it.
I think she played the perfect role.
She's great.
Yeah, she is
as Betsy.
Good.
Yep.
She was a bright spot in many not bright spots in this movie.
Yep. I think she made her career on this movie.
So we learn she's the perfect girl, and but the issue that we have right off the bat is...
Nick Cage doesn't want to get married.
And there's a reason. It's because he's got these weird mom issues because his mom, you know, scarred him on her deathbed.
Because he's Danny Aiello.
That's what I was going to say. It's kind of like a callback to that, right? Like, wasn't that the mom didn't want Danny Aiello to get married?
He's got Danny Aiello written all over his ass.
I didn't even think about that.
What?
It's
part of my movie Marriage.
Is it really? It makes sense now. It makes a lot of sense. But we learn he has issues that go to the point where he has had a dream about his mom vacuuming naked.
Yeah. It wasn't sexual, though. That's what he
did. Yeah. It's,
sure.
There's some weird stuff that he tells about his mom. These are all reasons why he's been with Sarah Jessica Parker or Betsy so long, and he hasn't popped the question. So their relationship gains a little turmoil.
Right. There's some friction. But she knows he has this issue because of his mother, and she's like, it's cool, I'll wait. But she doesn't wait. She's like, she starts pressing him, like, all right.
But it's like, yeah, they wait 2 years or something. She waits a couple of years. But yeah, you're right. They're not going to wait forever.
Yeah.
They're also very young. And I think that plays a theme in this too. Like bad decisions when you're young or decisions that you make. And I'm going to get into that a little bit when James Caan enters the scene.
Yeah.
Or enters the movie, which he's about to. But the next thing we learn is their relationship goes into turmoil, right?
Yeah.
And what's the best thing to do to get out of that? You might as well just go ahead and propose. And
it's like, get it out of the way. Fuck.
Right? Things are going bad, but if we propose, it's going to get better. It's like a marriage. You're turmoil. Let's have a kid. See if that helps. You know, stuff like that.
Yep.
But he gets the courage to finally propose, and where does he propose that they get married?
In traffic.
No, fucking Las Vegas.
Oh yeah. He's like, hey, we'll just fly to Vegas and just do the thing.
Because I think in 1990, or maybe all the way from the 70s to the 90s, it was a thing, right? Like you had to elope, and everybody said if you want to elope, you got to go to Vegas. It wasn't like I can go to Charlotte and get married at the courthouse or some shit like that.
You could always go to the courthouse.
Vegas was a big thing back then to go elope and get married in Vegas.
So I could be wrong about this, but I feel like there used to be maybe more strict laws around like how long, like getting a marriage license and shit like that. And it was like easier to do maybe in Las Vegas. There was some kind of thing like that. I feel like that started the whole thing.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I could be wrong about that though. I could just be totally making that up.
And then that completely got reversed because old boy and I were in Vegas.
We did not get married for
a bachelor party, but we had a friend who met a girl one night and we convinced them to go get married. And now there's the Britney Spears rule. So I didn't know this, but in Vegas, you cannot get married after midnight. Like there has to be like a sign up 48 hours in advance or something like that, because we learned all that night.
Right.
We tried to get somebody married at 2:30 in the morning, banging on the door of like the little pink chapel or something.
Man, we have some memories.
I had a lot of fun that weekend. Anyway, so back to Vegas. So we enter Vegas and we've got, you know, this is where we learn about Tommy, who is the big gambler.
Right.
Big man on campus, walks into the casino. You know, obviously he's been doing it for what they say, like 15 years.
He's got a permanent resident at Bally's, I guess.
They paint him in this movie as a billionaire. And like,
I mean, he has a home in Hawaii.
At least millions of heirs.
Yeah.
But we see him enter the scene, and then we see Nick and Jack and Betsy come in, and they
did
are going to
say millions of heirs. Sorry, I just did you say that?
It just rolled off the tongue. It might be the new thing.
Millions of heirs. Okay,
that's it.
I'm gonna put that in my vernacular.
So Jack and Betsy arrive in Las Vegas to get married, and then everything turns into a tornado once Tommy sees Betsy and thinks of his ex-wife because they look the same.
Yeah, Jimmy Caan sees SJP from across the room, has like a flashback and gets a hard on, and decides, I know what I'll do to get this lady looks just like his dead wife, okay? Who he also said was a leather bag.
Who he left out in the sun.
Yeah.
Like, it's the weirdest story. It's like, was she attractive? Because you're explaining, like, she's just...
Before skin cancer ruined her, he's like, yeah, she must have been attractive. She looked apparently just like SJP in this movie. Mm-hmm. But so... So he concocts a plan. He knows what he'll do. He will invite Nick Cage to a poker game.
Yep. And pretend it's on the hotel because Nick Cage played a little poker in the opening montage. And, you know, he's like, okay, I want to, you know, go play poker in this introductory game that the hotel puts on for new guests. Sure.
It's a lure. It's a trap. And then they get Nick Cage. He gets Nick Cage into the game where it's rigged, so Nick Cage owes him personally, not even the hotel, him personally, $65,000.
Yeah. To break down this poker game a little bit, I couldn't tell throughout this movie, one, obviously if it was rigged or not, but...
It was clearly rigged. Do you know how...
I know it was rigged, but I mean, that final hand that keeps going back and forth, and Nick Cage keeps borrowing money from this guy who he's betting against, which is the dumbest thing in the world.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't think that guy knows something that you don't know? Nick Cage's poker face is one of my favorite parts of this whole movie because there is none. And he's just like smiling and trying to hold it back. And it's like you are a fucking idiot. Like the guy next to you basically is Italian. And, you know, it's basically you're sitting at a table with what looks to be the Sopranos. You know, if you really look at all the characters at that table.
That old guy with the thick glasses that has the glasses.
I love that guy.
Oh, my God. That guy, he was the best. Yeah. I would watch a whole movie about that guy.
Yeah, 100%.
So he couldn't tell it. So anyway, like old boy said, Nick Cage loses $65,000.
Yeah, Nick Cage has a straight flush, which is
clearly... Unbeatable.
Yeah, which is the... I mean, yeah, dude, you don't lose with that hand. And it's to the jack. And Jimmy Conn has a fucking the same thing, but to a queen in hearts. And it's like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd have been calling bullshit.
Heart sinks. Then we see Nick Cage go groveling. Or no, first of all, Jimmy Conn, you know, pitches the idea. He knew this all along. He knew what he was doing. He pitches the idea. Hey, 65 grand, you owe me. You're not going to be able to get that from a loan shark. You're not going to be able to get that back home. I've got this idea.
Me your girlfriend for the weekend.
For the weekend. But he prefaces it by saying, you know, I had a wife. She looks just like her. This is what I'll be a perfect gentleman. I just want company.
Right then, wouldn't you have been like, oh, motherfucker, you lured me into this shit?
Right. You had to have seen it coming.
Yeah. When you lose on a straight flush, you have to be like, to one card higher. You have to be like,
okay, I'm getting run here.
So Nick Cage's back is against the wall. He goes and presents this to Betsy. Meanwhile, during this poker game, Betsy's by the pool, and good Lord. SJP in one of those early roles. So he goes... he goes back to
I think you're having like a Jimmy Conn moment
to Betsy, and like immediately just opens it up and, you know, like says we need to talk, like,
yeah, and then pimps her out.
I mean, how else do you approach that? What the fuck else are you gonna do? Like, for one, it's like think about it now. $65,000 in 1992 is what?
I looked it up. It's $140,000. Know what I would have done? I'd have been like, okay, listen, man, give me a couple hours. I need to talk to her about it. And I'd have gone down. I'd have been like, get in the fucking car. We're out of here. I'd have drove to California, gotten on a plane, and that cat would have never have seen me again.
I mean, that is a good point. You could try to get away, especially in the early 90s. It's probably easier to disappear than
I'd have got nowadays. The hell out of there. But anyway.
But he pitches this idea to Betsy, and the questions that come out of her mouth, you know, she's like, does he want me to walk around in her clothes or something? Like, you know, how could you do this? And then Nick Cage pitches that whole, it was a straight flush. It was an unbeatable hand. And her response, like, she does such a good job in
this
role.
She's awesome.
She's like, you know, obviously it didn't. And he's like, I know that now or something, like way over the top. Like Nick Cage. So in this movie,
Nick Cage does a great job. He is comedy proficient.
He is. But you guys say that he doesn't do like full Nick Cage. I think he does these things in this movie where he says a word and then like it just goes straight up in an octave.
Yeah.
Like all the time.
Yeah. I mean, he's got his Nick Cage isms in this movie. I just don't think he's generally as unhinged as he is in the rest of the movie. In other movies.
Yep.
So they're arguing about this and walking through this casino, and I love this this next clip we're about to play you, because it just it like turns this whole thing around, and you're like, oh my God, he actually did this, and now what is going to happen in this movie? This was the peak, right? You know, this is where we go from here, but I absolutely love this.
Yeah. Look at all these families here. Happy families. I'm a whore, Jack. You've made me into a whore.
Honey, you don't think this is destroying me? I don't know what to do.
You brought me to Las Vegas and you turned me into a whore, Jack.
Yeah, let's just forget about this, all right? This is insanity, and somehow I'll get the money.
And this is going on in an arcade where a bunch of kids are watching.
And laughing.
And
yeah.
They're like, damn.
And it's like a classic arcade, man. Yeah. When I saw that, I was like, damn, that is like the Hell arcade of my youth.
Hell yeah.
But I think she like paints a picture, and then so
and it's true.
So what happens? I mean, it is true, and it sucks. And it's like, this is, you know, you agreed to this. Every other guy out there would just, you know, Nick Cage in this movie, he says she's not going to agree to this. Like, he never said he wouldn't agree to it.
Yeah.
There's just so many other thoughts in my head. It's like, who's the bad guy here? At this point, actually, soon after this point, I'm like, who's the bad guy here? Because the next thing we see is, you know, James Caan and SJP meeting for dinner to see if this is going to be a viable thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Dude, yeah. I wrote down, I was like, all right, why would she agree to it? Like, I get it. She loves the guy. Yeah. She wants to get married and everything. But, like, a guy that would do that, I'd be like, you did what? I'm sorry. Clown shoes. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
But
I don't get why she'd do it either.
But it's a comedy.
In this first meeting between the two, I also, Juicebox is gonna hate me for this one, but I think James Caan is smooth as fuck in this meeting.
No, like, he's so fucking gross. He is gross in every encounter with her, man. Every fucking encounter, he's gross.
The boat ride is gross. I think he's kind of gross. He's not that gross. He's talking about his dead wife, which
cool.
A little bit weird.
Smooth.
Yeah. But then he just starts talking about, I don't know. I saw it as smooth.
Okay.
I guess I'm just looking at it through the lens of, also, this is somebody that's 25 years older probably than this chick. Like,
sure.
He's a 50-year-old man and is like a 25-year-old girl. Like,
yeah, and he's
just
going through extremes to get it wet.
Dude.
I mean, yeah. But it's just the way he is with words, and like, he's just, I don't know. I think he's a good actor. I think his mannerisms and his words come out as confident as.
Hey, yeah, that's cool, man. I'm not a fan. Yeah.
So this is what I'm talking about. After this meeting, they go back to the hotel room, and you find out that SJP is into this. And that James Caan's taking her to Hawaii.
Right.
And
because it wasn't prefaced that they had to stay in Vegas. So now they're going to Hawaii.
So now that's where my thought goes, is who's the bad guy? Because now you've got the young bride who just met this dude who's just going to roll off to Hawaii and leave her. Is it a fiance at that point?
Sure.
I know they were going to get married. I guess. But You got Nick Cage, who basically offered her up for $65,000, and then you've got James Caan, who wants to take advantage of the situation.
Who's trying to resurrect his dead wife and this woman.
Yep.
And then her agreeing to go, like, and not really having any issue with it. She's
not
like,
having an issue with it was my biggest thing.
Yeah.
Like, she immediately goes back into that hotel room, and it gave me like PTSD flashbacks from an ex-girlfriend. And it was just like, dude, fuck. Like, I hate this type of person.
So, let's roll reverse real quick. All right. So, we're in Vegas. All right. And,
yeah.
And all right. So, we're in Vegas. Your wife goes off, or I'm sorry, your future wife goes off, gambles, comes back, is like, I fucking put our life savings in a slot machine. However, I have an out. You have to go with this old lady for a weekend, but you get to go to Hawaii and shit. And I'm like, I would probably say the same things. SJP says, right? I'd be like, do I have to sleep with this lady?
And so it's stuff like cocktails.
That, right? Like, I wouldn't do it. But
See, but I would be like, how much?
Yeah, how much? And is I just go hang out with this person for? I'm like, okay, is it that bad? Fuck it. You know what I mean? So you go, you hang out, you eat their snacks and stuff and drink their beer, and then you come home.
Is it weird that I don't have as big of a problem?
when it's role reversed? Yeah. Right.
Of course you don't. That's why she didn't have a big problem with it.
That's why I had to role reverse. I'm like, all right, put myself in these shoes. Did you guys know this is based off a true story?
I did not know that.
Facts.net, I'm sure, doesn't lie. Hold on,
it doesn't sound like it does.
I didn't get facts.com. So,
so they didn't get facts.net. Yeah, it says, this can't be fucking true. But anyway, there's no like background information. It just says facts.net. It's like Honeymoon in Vegas was inspired by a true story. And it's like, yeah, fuck y'all. Anyway, so go ahead.
All right. So SJP ends up going to Hawaii with Creeper Jimmy. Old Man.
Yeah.
And Nick Cage goes back to the infamous Mike Tyson case, which doesn't help because the guy starts describing somebody being with Mike Tyson and Nick Cage, all he sees is SJP with Jimmy Khan.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. Then he goes on his little quest to make it back to find them in Hawaii.
Right. Yeah. I must have gotten up and went did something because I didn't realize he went back to New York. I was like, why would he just stay?
Yeah, it did. I don't know, unless he just didn't want to pay for the hotel room. Maybe. But he said he got a deal on it, so I don't know why. Yeah, I don't know why he wouldn't stay there. Wait.
I'm unclear on that.
But then we get one of my favorite parts of this entire movie, and it is a situation that we've all been in, whether you are in a line at a coffee shop or you are at the airport trying to, you know, buy tickets for a flight. This must have been a big thing in 1992 because now you just buy them online. But
yeah, who goes to the ticket counter or the counter and buys a ticket? Like nobody, right?
No, but you've been in this situation in a grocery store where somebody's trying to use a lot of coupons or write a check or something like that, where you're stuck in a line behind like an idiot in the front and you're in a hurry or a rush. And you just want to fucking say something.
You know, this is so funny because I saw you in this scene. I was like, you were so impatient that I was like, oh, he's going to love this. And I'm not surprised you're about to play it.
Yeah, I am, because I had to cut this out. Nick Cage goes to bat. This is one of my, it's probably my favorite part of the entire movie. Nick Cage goes to bat for all of humanity. Let me paint a picture for you. You've got, what's the guy's name?
Ben Stein.
Ben Stein at the front of this ticket counter line. Nick Cage about 8 people back. And he's up there trying to negotiate with this lady, with the ticket lady, mm-hmm. on a flight that is like months away. And he's going through super saver stuff and asking questions and all this stuff. And everybody else just wants to buy a flight for that day. So then you get this whole scenario.
Can only fly on a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. And it's
look, I've got a major problem, okay? My fiance was kidnapped and taken to Hawaii. I've got to get there now.
Well, I'm trying to make arrangements to get to Milwaukee for my nephew Douglas's wedding on the 21st.
You're not even flying today?
No. Consumer Reports said that if you make your travel arrangements 2 weeks in advance,
which is true,
this line, we're all flying today.
Please, sir, if you don't get back on...
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail. Just get your ticket and move on, okay? Get your goddamn ticket and move on!
He's a hero.
He is a hero. He is speaking for me and everyone else out there that's impatient. Just be efficient, like, and realize your surroundings. Like, this guy has a fiance who's been kidnapped, and that's my favorite part of that whole thing too. He's like, she's been kidnapped. Wouldn't everybody be like, oh shit? Like, should we get the cops on the line here?
Or this guy's just being extra dramatic. For me, that that person or that scenario is people buying lottery tickets.
Okay. Yes.
Like the people that are get there, like, oh, let me get 5 of those $1 ones, and then
looking up
like,
all their grandkids' birthdays.
Yeah, that's like,
or the reverse, people that are cashing in lottery tickets and they just have a stack that they're gonna scan on the back to see if they want anything.
Damn.
Yeah, that shit drives me insane. All right, so let's move on to this movie. Nick Cage obviously pursuing.
Yeah, so
Betsy again.
Yeah, so in the meantime, Sarah Jessica Parker and Jimmy Caan are like hitting it off, man. She's like digging the Hawaiian house and like his family, and they're getting closer. She's out there looking at the ocean.
She is very, yeah, she swings very quickly.
She's falling. Yeah. And in the meantime, Jimmy's gaslighting her, and he's like, yeah, I can't believe your husband only, you know, gambled $3,000 and wouldn't pay $3,000 for you. And she's like, $3,000? She told me $65,000.
Yeah.
She buys that bullshit. And then so she's like, you know what? Fuck it. Yeah, let's get married. She tells the old dude, you know what? Yeah, let's get married. I'm ready. Now.
I was about to say, you want to know what my thought process right when that happened was?
They did it, right?
I said, SJP actually wants to do this. I said, this is like Big Daddy when Adam Sandler says, but his balls are old. Like... That was my thought. I was like, she actually wants to do this. I get the pursuing because you're mad at your fiance hanging you out to dry.
And she's being like bought out, dude. I mean, she's about to have a house in Hawaii. So she is selling out, but she says yes to this old dude. But they do it, right? Yeah, they do it. I don't know, man.
She lets it. No, she lets him kiss her.
You just got engaged and you think they don't do it?
I don't think they do it.
You're telling me.
If we're talking about sex, I don't think they had sex.
I don't think they did either, man.
I disagree, and here's why. Because the next morning, Nick Cage, the next morning, she's like despondent, and she's kind of like staring off, and he's like, hey, you know, everything's still good. And she's like, I'm wanting to go back. It's because she got some little Jimmy Caan. She's regretting it. And so all of a sudden there's a whole change in SJP. It's because she slept with him. She slept with him, I'm telling you.
You just created that entire scenario say the words little Jimmy Caan.
You wrote that down probably right there.
I did not write down little Jimmy Caan. But it sounds great, though, doesn't it?
I don't believe you whatsoever.
You can read my notes. I'm telling you, they do, because all of a sudden, her whole attitude towards him changes.
I mean, I see what you're saying. You're right about that. I just didn't think of it in that context. I just thought she was like coming back down to earth after being like kind of overwhelmed with all this shit that this dude had.
I thought her attitude changed when he proposed to her, said we're gonna get married.
Yeah She was all about it.
I want to have kids immediately.
Yes, yeah. You're right.
And then
she said okay.
And then fucking she realized, you know what, maybe I'm not too much into it, you know. And so she calls Jack, can't get in touch with him. She's like, shit.
No, she does agree to it because they go back to Vegas to get married.
I know, but she in the after the
fellatio. Yeah.
Whoa, I didn't go that far. Wow.
I mean, it's fellatio. Part of the act, right?
Okay.
Don't put me on the fucking...
Whatever, man.
No.
I think she just realizes old man sex, she can wait a couple of 20 years for that, and then so she's trying to get her man back now.
That's true. While this is going on, and before they go back to Vegas, because Nick Cage is flying all over the place here, he finally gets to the island where they're at, and Mahi Mahi, which is Mr. Miyagi, ends up picking him up and trying to like derail him from finding Betsy.
Right.
And he takes him to this guy's house named Chief Orman, who is awesome.
Awesome.
I think he's one of the greatest characters in this movie.
Sure, for a white guy playing an ethnic guy.
I'm not usually into cultural appropriation. I'm kind of like,
okay.
But this is
it.
Like, what's going on? What is going on here?
I don't know, but when he was out of it, first of all, he made him drink, what was that? It was some kind of weird.
Tea or something?
No, it was like brandy. It was some kind of weird brandy.
Looked like lemon.
Oh, yeah. What was it called?
It was disgusting, but. When he said
dandelion tea or something,
dandelion brandy. Yeah. And then he looked at me, he says, you think Chief Orman looked pretty? And I was like, where is this going? Like,
you loved it.
I thought
you loved it.
It was comic relief.
Comic relief.
It was random. Okay. That dude was Peter Boyle.
It is Peter Boyle. Yeah.
Like I had to look at it. I was like, is that Peter Boyle? And sure enough, it was, man.
Yeah.
All right, so you guys are caught up on the story. Jimmy Khan, SJP, go back to Vegas to get married. You kind of know what's going to happen here, right?
Yeah, so they rush off back to Vegas to get married real quick.
Too. Yeah.
And SJP's having second thoughts the whole time. Meanwhile, Nick Cage can't find a flight back because they keep, you know, putting up these blocks. And he ends up on this flying Elvis's skydiving plane. And that's right. How he's going to get to Vegas.
Yeah. He is walking around on the tarmac at the airport with a sign that just says Las Vegas. Like, yeah. that's pre-9/11 airports for you.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. Walking around the tarmac.
Also, if I'm not mistaken, there was like a miss there because he could only get a flight to El Paso, Texas. And I didn't see him go to any other airport. So were these flying Elvis is coming from El Paso, Texas, and taking that flight to Vegas? Because that's a long-ass
Seems
flight.
Seems like a long flight. No idea.
No, they were...
They were out of San Jose, wherever he was.
He had to go to El Paso because they blocked him from going to L.A., and he couldn't get another flight into California. I know, these are a lot of technical details.
Angeles. Okay.
So that happened. Anyway, so he gets on this skydiving, plane.
Skydiving plane.
How he's going to get to Vegas to save SJP from Jimmy Khan.
Yep. So he's going to jump out of a plane dressed as an Elvis because, you know, there's no other way, right?
So you see this, Jimmy Khan turns into, like, really creeper Jimmy Khan when she basically says no. Like, yeah. I don't want to get married. And he says, basically, you know, you don't say no to me.
Yeah. Yeah, he roughs her up a little bit, and then she escapes.
He roughs her up.
Well, he grabs her, right?
He grabs her.
He does manhandle her a little bit.
Shakes her a little bit.
Offers her $1 million to marry him, and then she turns that down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for her. And then she dresses up in one of those
showgirl
outfits, and Jesus Christ. But by that time, Nick Cage is above the Bally Hotel in Vegas, and he is about to jump out of an airplane for the very first time ever without any training.
And land on a target.
And land on a target.
In the middle of Las Vegas.
Which I just wrote down, this is unrealistic skydiving.
There's a lot of unrealistic shit going on. But yes, and... The announcer, there's people announcing the people.
Knew his name.
And they knew his name. The announcer knew Nick Cage's character's name. But that announcer is the old SNL announcer, right?
Oh, yeah. What was that guy's name?
But clearly the old SNL announcer from when we were kids.
Like, Rod Roddy?
What?
No, that was Price is Right.
Yeah. Jimmy
Pardo?
Jimmy Pardo? Was that it?
Is that it? But it's clearly him. And I was like, oh, man, I missed that voice, dude. But anyway, yeah, the guy somehow knows Nick Cage is jumping out of this plane. SJP hears him. She's like, oh, is that him? And he lands. They hug and kiss, and everything's fine. Yeah. Right.
The relaxed police in this, they're like holding people back, and she just runs up. She's like, that's my husband, or that's my fiance, or whatever she says. And they're just okay.
Yep.
Then Jimmy Khan just gives up, and happily ever after.
Yeah, he's like, fuck it, I'll see if I buy some other woman.
Which is, so I guess, Nick Cage doesn't owe him that money anymore, even though they never really had.
Because technically she spent the weekend, and more than the weekend, she was there till like Wednesday, what they explained. That was another little breakdown in the movie when she told him, I don't know, I might be there. He's like, just the weekend? She's like, I don't know, I might be there till Tuesday or Wednesday. He's like, Tuesday or Wednesday? Like, he throws this big fit in the hotel room when he finds out. Oh, Nick Cage does have blow-up moments in this.
He's so butthurt about it, but he's the one that caused it all, but he's the one that's like,
A typical male.
It's great.
You're young.
It's funny. They have a good... chemistry, a good fighting chemistry.
I agree with that. So that's basically the movie Honeymoon in Vegas.
They go to the chapel, they get married with all the Elvises.
So I think Juicebox has some stats on this movie for us.
Ooh. Yeah, so this movie cost $25 million to make in 1991, which I guess is when it came out in 92, right? So yeah, it would have been 91. Made in 91 or whatever. But
probably renting out all that Vegas space.
Renting out the Vegas stuff had to be.
I guess so, and like all the skydiving shots, because they would have had to do the skydiving thing like multiple times. I was like trying to pay attention to that. Like,
at night.
There's multiple different camera angles. Like, and they would have had to do it a few times.
And he skydives for real.
Did he really do it?
He really did it. I think that's his shtick. Yeah, I think that's his thing.
So anyway, but it made $35 million. So this is one of the first movies.
He's back.
Maybe since Raising Arizona.
That is profitable.
That has made money.
Woo.
For Nick Cage.
It does seem like he's been in exile a little bit. And now this is like him climbing back.
Yeah, because Wild at Heart, it was a flop, wasn't it? Like, it didn't make it 20 back.
I think. I think it broke even. I know Zandali flopped, and I know...
Yeah.
What was the last one we did? Exactly. Firebirds flop.
Firebirds.
Big flop.
Yeah, huge flop on that one. Was it? Vampire Kiss was like...
Flop.
Made $750,000 total or something.
Flop,
like,
but
that
became a cult classic. You've got to give him that. But this was a mainstream movie. I mean, it was probably one of those ones that were like, coming this summer, you know, Honeymoon in Vegas.
So I will say, like, it was up against some other decent movies when it came out in the theater, and it was number one at the box office the first week.
I could see that. A lot of
rom-com. And it was up against
fans.
Unforgiven, Pet Sematary 2, Single White Female, Death Becomes Her. Do you guys remember that
I
movie?
Do remember that,
that
movie.
Trippy movie. League of Their Own, Twin Peaks movie.
Damn.
Three Ninjas, Sister Act.
Wow. Those are some heavy hitters.
Vampire Slayer. So there, I mean,
I think I saw all those movies in theaters.
I didn't see Single White Female in the theater.
The fuck? What? Where were you?
I don't think I did either.
I didn't see that. But I saw, I mean, I think I remember seeing Sister Act and Three Ninjas.
Or, oh, you said Three Ninjas.
Yeah, Side Three Ninjas. And
I saw Death Become Her in the theater, I think.
I saw that movie, too.
What was the other one? It's Sister Act. I think I saw in the theater.
Yeah, Sister Act was there. But, I mean, it beat a lot of these movies. But, you know, like we talked about before, some of these movies... Like, Sister Act had already been in the theaters for 14 weeks.
I would be interested to see how it stayed. Like, did it stay on top? Or did, like, how do movies, do they flop after the first weekend? Did they gain popularity?
Next weekend, it was number one also.
Okay. So it held, you know, Nick Cage has some staying power.
Weekend after that, it was number two.
What was number one the weekend after that?
Sneakers.
Anyway, so that's, you know, kind of... where we're at on Honeymoon in Vegas. We do a couple of things before we get out of here. Before we rate this movie with our ratings, I'm sure you have your own in your head. With our three-tier rating system, we do a couple of different segments. One is Movie Marriage, where we take two movies and we smash them together and we say that they got together just like...
Little Jimmy Kahn and SJP.
And
we take two movies, we fly them out to a house in Las Vegas, and then... propose, and then they do it,
and they realize that it was a mistake, but one of them
is pregnant,
so. Is pregnant and had this baby, what we call Honeymoon in Vegas. I'll get this thing kicked off.
Go.
I've got Indecent Proposal.
We're all gonna have that one.
And yeah, Vegas Vacation.
Okay.
And the reason because Indecent Proposal is a serious movie that which I really enjoyed. Robert Redford, Woody Harrelson, Demi Moore. And Vegas Vacation is a silly movie, and I think this is a fucking marriage.
All right, cool. All right, I too have Indecent Proposal, and like I said earlier, Moonstruck, because he's kind of like Danny Aiello's character in Moonstruck. He has mommy issues, commitment issues, and another man snakes his wife, and there's just no gambling debt.
So yeah,
that's it.
I like that marriage, Bucky. I had the exact same movie marriage.
Really? Yeah. Awesome. That means we're on the same page with what we saw. Both movies are great, Indecent Proposal and Vegas Vacation.
I mean, we didn't even talk about this. This is the same movie as Indecent Proposal.
You're right,
right? Like,
right.
More or less.
No. So I was thinking about that pretty hard because Indecent Proposal was Robert Redford offered Woody Harrelson $1 million to sleep with his wife. That was a sexual thing. It wasn't just a, like, I want to hang out with you all weekend. I won you in a card game for $65,000.
Right.
And then the end of Indecent Proposal, if you guys remember, Woody Harrelson buys like an elephant, like at some weird exotic animal auction. And he just takes that $1 million and spends it on like an elephant and then gives that to like the elephant people.
I'm not real
sure.
Thanks for spoiling
it. I don't remember the elephant part. See, I thought... Yeah, okay.
I've seen way more movies than you.
That's not true.
All right. Well, awesome. Another thing that we do before we get to our rating system here, our ratings on Honeymoon in Vegas here in Bucky's basement is a tagline. It's where we read the original tagline for the movie, and then we try to recreate taglines that we think are more appropriate.
The tagline for Honeymoon in Vegas was, "Honeymoon in Vegas, a comedy about one bride, two grooms, and a wedding party you won't believe." I feel like I need to do that in such a like a lighter voice.
It's a perfect voice. Like honeymoon like in Vegas.
Honeymoon in Vegas.
You won't believe.
Yeah. all right. Knock us out. You want me to go? Or do you want to go? I feel like you want to go. I think we're all going to have one. I think we're all going to have this one, and I'll just do it real quick. Honeymoon in Vegas. You turned her into a whore, Jack.
I've got a serious one and a dumb one, and they're both dumb, honestly. So I'll go with the serious one because this is some weird shit that Jimmy Conn says to SJP on the boat, which is, "Honeymoon in Vegas, just tell me when you want me to stop."
Which, another example of fucking cringe.
Yes. And then I've got, "Honeymoon in Vegas, really?"
Okay.
And that's it.
That's it?
All right. Now, I had another one, but it's way worse.
Oh, and those we want to hear it. Let Juicebox go.
I'll edit it out, I guess. "Honeymoon in Vegas. Hope you like Elvis."
There's a lot of Elvis in this.
"Honeymoon in Vegas. At least it's not a musical." Because did you guys know they made this into a musical? Fucking musical.
Wow.
Like there wasn't...
You know what? That's crazy. Because I was just thinking, like, when you said Moonstruck, I was, like, trying to think to myself, as like, would this make a stage play? Could they do, like, a stage
version play of this?
And they did. They did. Except for a musical.
They did a musical out of this.
That's crazy. All right, so let's get on to our ratings, because we got to get out of here.
Oh, you're doing it. Do it. I'm not doing it. You're doing it, dude.
No.
Come on, man. That's why we're here.
Why are we here? For you to laugh at us?
It's late. Do it.
I don't know if I can do this in serious or funny.
Do it in the Ben Stein voice.
Why do you always try to get me to do that?
I'll look this way.
I don't know how to do Ben Stein.
Okay.
I just wrote down, "Honeymoon in Vegas, Sonny Corleone lives."
You're right. We fucking wasted people's time. I'm so sorry.
I told you it was bad.
To the listenership.
Yep. Yeah. All right. So let's get on to our rating system to cleanse the palate here. We have a 3-tier rating system for all Nick Cage movies. And I'm going to let Juicebox get us kicked off today.
Now all I can think about is how this is Sonny Corleone just aged up, and like if he left the crime family and just became a gambler or something.
And
like.
And from this went to run the Montecito in that show Las Vegas, right?
Yes.
It's just
holy shit.
It's just Sonny Corleone.
It's just the natural progression of his character in life.
That's it.
He's been put in witness protection.
That's it.
He's actually just been in one long like movie or his whole career. It's just like.
Best point we've made all night.
I like that.
I'm going.
All right, I'm a little tired, a little wired, and I think I deserve a little appreciation.
Middle of the road, because I don't know. This movie was all right. It was better than some of the last couple movies that we watched.
No doubt.
But it's still, there was not much to it. You know, if it didn't have the comedy relief of Nick Cage and like, just the other random shit that happens in this movie, like it would have been a fuck.
Dead. Yeah. It'd have been, yeah.
All right. Old boy. What do you got?
I'm not going to hit the button. I'm going to give it the same rating. I remember really liking this movie as a kid, and that just shows my kid's naivety. So it hasn't aged. Maybe I've just outgrown it, but it's still okay.
Isn't it funny? Like Raising Arizona, we watched as kids and it holds up, and we watched as kids and so far, not so much.
Not so much, man. So,
man, this could be the second time ever that we all three of us have actually agreed on a rating for a movie, but it's not going to be.
Yeah, he's awful damn good. I think I got the best one.
And the reason that I am pressing the highest rating on this movie is because, one, we came out of Nick Cage purgatory. Two, I watched Smooth this movie criminal. Three nights in a row. I watched it three times in a row.
Did you eat Pizza Hut?
Three, SJP, shoe. Four, I could be laying on a couch on a Sunday afternoon flipping through the channels and this is on TBS and I'm not going to change it. Just because fair I want to see... I want to see Mr. Miyagi. I want to see, you know, some of these Nick Cage things. I want to see the Peter Boyle scene. Bruno I want to Mars. See SJP is an awesome actress in this. I think she should have been nominated for something. I know she's early. It's an early role. But
I agree. I think
this is a movie I could watch multiple times. And that for that reason, it gets my best rating.
You get your highest one. Nick Cage did a great job. But do you guys think Judd Nelson could have done a better job?
No.
I disagree. I think Judd Nelson could have done a great job in this.
See, I think at this point, Judd Nelson's starting to get phased out, right?
Yeah, he's been.
I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen him like do comedy, right? Like.
Breakfast Club, I guess. Is that comedy?
I mean, was he funny in that?
No.
I don't think he was funny in that. Yeah, he was like playing the bad boy, yeah, right?
He was touché. Funny because he was kind of a bully.
Yeah, touche.
All right. Well, that concludes another episode of Casting Cage. We are so glad that you guys tuned in wherever you're listening to us from, whatever podcast platform. If you're watching us on YouTube, you can do that every single week. Stay tuned because we have just come out of Nick Cage Purgatory and I don't know if we're going back in or if we're entering a comedic phase because up next is the 1993 comedy drama Amos and Andrew.
That's next.
That is next. So yeah, if you're listening,
we're back in Purgatory.
Starring Nick Cage and Samuel L. Jackson. If you guys are listening to us out there, study up. Go find you a copy of Amos and Andrew, watch it, and then we will be back.
Join us.
Hold on. I got a question for you real quick before we end this up. Name a bad movie that Samuel L. Jackson has been in.
Amos and Andy.
fair enough. I haven't seen it, so I can't say that. But I'm just saying, like, he's generally in movies that are, like, decent.
You're right. I even like what's the Lethal Weapon knockoff he did?
Naked Gun?
No. but I like movies like that too. It's
I don't know. He's always a good character.
What about that movie? It's like a Sin City knockoff where he's like a bad guy.
I don't know.
I don't even know. He's been in so many movies.
Now I'm looking up Nick Cage Sam Jackson movies, which we could have done one of these on that.
He's been in a ton of movies.
But that is what we have got coming up next is Amos and Andrew. I'm actually excited about this. Looking at the poster, I remember Sam Jackson's like a rich guy who has like a vacation home that Nick Cage tries to rob. And then they just get into like a quirky comedy type thing.
Okay.
But, Juicebox hadn't seen it. I don't think old boy. I saw it
when I was a kid.
He doesn't remember it. I'm excited to hear their reactions and go back and forth about another Nick Cage movie on Casting Cage. Thank you guys so much for listening to us. We will see you next week.
Yeah.
Little sister, don't you? Little sister, don't you? Little sister, don't you kiss me once or twice and say it's very nice and then you run? Little sister, don't you do what your big sister done?